Are you a writer wanting to go deeper in your writing and get to the heart of your story? Join Christie Award-winning author Jamie Jo Wright at madlitmentoring.com, where she will take you on an intimate, fun, and exploration of going deeper, the layers of your story, the four corners of foundation, and more. Find out how to be mentored by Jamie Jo Wright at madlitmentoring.com. Hey there, Mad Lit enthusiasts. Our podcast is sponsored by the esteemed Baker Publishing Group. Whether you're into heartwarming romance, gripping suspense, or deep dives into matters of faith and society, Baker Publishing Group has it all. With Revell and Bethany House Publishers under their umbrella, they bring you a diverse array of books that will captivate your mind and stir your soul. Check out all of their line at www.bakerbookhouse.com. Hi, everyone. It is Jamie Jo Wright, season 5 here at Mad Lit Musings, and we have a guest back that we're all going to love, Karen Whittemeyer. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
It's so fun to have you here, and we had you here for your last release, which was a spinoff of Snow White.
Correct.
Remind me the title of that one.
Fairest of Heart.
Right. That's right. And now we're going into what sounds like, by the title, If the Boot Fits, a Cinderella spinoff. Am I correct?
It is. Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, tell us a little bit about this because it looks super good.
Well, you know, I love fairy tales. And so this has been really fun taking this Texas Ever After series and giving well-known fairy tales a Western cowboy spin. So this one was actually inspired by Woody from Toy Story, because in the second Toy Story movie, he has this line where he's talking to Jessie, the little cowgirl, and he's like, well, if the boot fits. And I was like, that is the perfect title right there. I need to go with that.
I love it.
So that really kind of was one of the things that inspired me to start writing fairy tales with cowboys. And so it was a lot of fun. The trickiest part, so this is we have a gender swap on this. So it's a Cinderfella story.
Oh, cool.
So the cowboy is the down on his luck, you know, poor stepson. He has a stepmother and two stepbrothers. Mm-hmm. And then the heroine is the daughter of the local cattle king. So he's like owns all the property and all the ranches and all that. And he's, you know, big wig in town. Mm-hmm. And so she just wants to be loved for who she is and not the connections that daddy brings. And, you know, he's just trying to help out his stepmom and keep everything afloat financially and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it was fun doing that. But then the other thing that I did to twist it up a little bit was in so many of these fairy tales, the stepmother is the evil person, right? She's the villainess.
Right.
And, you know, stepmoms get a bad rap in fairy tales.
They do.
And there are some wonderful, godly, loving, kind step parents out there.
Absolutely.
And so I really wanted to redeem the stepmother character. So she is and the aunt of the heroine kind of take on the fairy godmother role in the story.
Okay.
And then we have a secret villain that will hopefully be hidden until close to the end. So that was a lot of fun to mix that up a little.
That sounds super fun. I think you're going to redeem, I shouldn't say redeem, you're going to engage a lot of stepmothers with this book. They're going to like, yes, finally being accurately portrayed as nice people.
Right.
There are so many stepmothers too that have really stepped into the role of motherhood and adopted children as their own and done phenomenal jobs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think they need to be honored as the heroines that they are. So.
Amen. And then, yes, I was thinking, you mentioned the aunt was kind of like the fairy godmother in this one. And that struck me funny because that's how I always pictured my aunt. She was the one that would come along and make everything magical when my mom was just being a putz.
Poor moms. They have to have the disciplining and all of that.
I know. And then the aunts get to be fun. I have a t-shirt that I wear to Christmas parties because my husband has four sisters, and then we've got a whole bunch of nieces and nephews. And mine is like, this is what the best aunt looks like. And it causes some family rifts at
Oh, I can
Christmas.
imagine. Wonder if anyone's going to steal that to wear it the next day.
Yeah, I don't know, but now after this book, I might have to put on a, a little fancy tiara and carry my wand with me, like, ha
There you go. Perfect.
ha. Oh, fun. So, okay, so Cinderella is really known through time as a fairy tale of her, like you mentioned, her being rescued by the prince. So, in your story, because it's a Cinderfella, like it's a flip, gender roles there. Does he need rescuing from her, or is it more of a relationship, wealthy meets poor? Take us a little deeper, I guess.
Sure, absolutely. Well, the book actually opens with the ball. So the ball is not the end. The ball is the beginning. He is not an invited guest at the ball. So he has his own motive for being there, and it's not really very altruistic at the time. But there are some events that happen, and he ends up rescuing the heroine's younger brother as he's there for nefarious purposes.
I love
So
that.
she sees that, he might have been there for a suspicious reason, but he's a good guy because, he took the time. He was being chased. He took the time to stop and help the brother, saved him from drowning and that kind of thing. This was the trickiest part, is how does a cowboy leave his boot behind accidentally?
That was going
Because,
to be one of my next questions. Boots don't fall off.
women can just run out of their shoes. That happens, that's sort of believable.
Exactly.
Cowboys' boots just don't fall off. I mean,
No,
they
they have to get tugged on.
sometimes you have to tug them really hard to get them off. So I had to figure out why in the world would he leave a boot behind and how could that happen? And so once I figured that out, so the whole drowning thing, he had to take his boots off to get into the pond to rescue the brother. And then as he's trying to make his escape, he drops one of his boots and it's left behind because he didn't have time to put them back on. So she finds the boot and doesn't know who he is. And she wants to find out who he is, but her brother is like, we need to like protect him because dad thinks he's bad, but he saved my life and I think we should kind of protect him. So she doesn't tell anybody that she found the boot. She kind of hides it for herself and does her own investigating. And then it's kind of a story of he knows it's her, but she doesn't know it's him for a while. And so there are several times where her life is threatened several times throughout the book. And so he still gets to play the hero a few times. But then at the very end, there's some mutual saving and all that kind of stuff happening. So
That's kind of fun.
it's a lot of fun to there. I planted a lot of Easter eggs for those that grew up with the Disney version of this, that they will, there's even some sewing mice that show
I
up in
was just gonna ask, is
the
disgusting.
So there's lots of fun little Easter eggs for people to find and to have that nostalgia of tying back into that, movie that they loved as a kid. So.
Well, it's funny because when you were mentioning that he leaves his boot behind, that was one of the thoughts that I had because my uncle was a rancher and a cattleman. And I remember when I was a kid in New Mexico, and he would come in. First of all, they don't take their boots off for anything. Like those things are a part of their appendage. And then when they finally decide they must take them off for whatever purpose, he had like a boot horn, he called it. And he had to hook his boot in it. And it was like this whole thing. I mean, he could do it real smooth, but when he would have me try and do it with my little cowboy boots, I just struggled and struggled so hard to get my leg out.
It's not easy.
No, it's
I have a pair of
not.
boots, and I still have to get my husband. Can you please take this off? I can't get
I don't know if I could fit my feet in boots anymore. I got the old lady cankle thing going on. Oh, that's fun. So, okay. So, and the cover too, she's wearing the typical blue Cinderella. And then I loved too on the cover of the Snow White version. I always forget the names. Fairest of Hearts, is that what it was? She looks like she's wearing kind of like that Cinderella dress. So, because this opens with the ball, I'm assuming that's kind of what the dress she's wearing on the cover is from the ball. I love that because it's kind of that Western Victorian era dresses. I'm looking at the cover right now. That's why I'm looking over to the side.
Yes.
That's another stunning cover, really.
They did such a good job. I'm really loving the playoff of the well-known fairy tale look, and yet taking it and giving it a nice Western twist. So it's been a lot of fun. I've been very happy.
I would be too. It's just gorgeous. So, okay, so this is cool. So then, wait, so she has the brother. So she has the siblings. Does the hero have siblings then? Like, 'cause I know we typically have this wicked stepsisters too. We've got a nice mother. So where does that come in?
So the hero does have two stepbrothers, and they are younger than him. And they so this was another I love playing with names. Names are one of my favorite things to play with. So the hero's name, instead of Cinderella, is Asher Ellis. So Asher
Oh,
kind of plays
nice.
off of Cinder, and then Ellis with Ella. So I had fun with that. And then the two brothers. The older one is named Jonathan, but he goes by Jack, and the youngest one's name is Fergus. And so you have Jack and Gus, and which are the two mice that helped Cinderella out. So I had a little fun playing with that. And so the youngest brother, he was my favorite to write. He's the imaginative one. He loves to write stories, and he's where the sewing mice come in because they're part of his imagination, and he has this whole barnyard full of characters that he plays with and all of this. So I had a lot of fun with him, and he gave me a little freedom to bring in some of those Disney elements that wouldn't have made sense otherwise.
That's super cool. That's super cool. Now, I know the Disney story is also very different from the original Cinderella story. So do you hearken anything back to the original Cinderella story too, or?
I stay more with the Disney version. There's no cutting off of toes. There's no,
Oh, you guys, what a blessing. Karen Whitmire is not transferring to a different genre, folks. You can still enjoy the warm, light-hearted romance.
So yes, I kept to the version that I grew up with, growing up with that Disney version. And so that's really the version I modeled this after. And I thought it was probably the one that on the whole, the majority of people would relate best to that one because that would be the one that culture as a whole, our culture would understand best.
Yeah, I think you're right. In fact, I don't know if a lot of people even realize how dark and violent the original Cinderella really was.
Children's stories in the Victorian era were not very nice.
They weren't. When I was writing one of my books, I was trying to look up a nursery rhyme that was less known. And I didn't know where I was going with it. I just like lesser known nursery rhyme that was also public domain. And that's where I found this nursery rhyme about they called him Cock Robin. And it was all about how this robin is dead and all the different animals in nature are contributing to its funeral. And it's like this was sung at their bedtimes. And I'm like, what? My kids would have had nightmares.
I know. This is why people, wanted to go and see public hangings. That was entertainment. But I'm like, ooh. I'm
They talk
glad
about,
culture has changed some since then.
yes, we just do public hangings on TV as violent movies for entertainment.
Yes.
So,
Yes.
we just say it's not real. It's not real. It's CGI. Oh, fun. Okay. And so these stories too, coming back to your book and away from the dark, because I always go, oh, dark, let's go. These are set in Texas, correct? I think you mentioned.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And how many books are going to be in this set?
So there are three books that are coming out with Bethany House. And then I will be indie pubbing a fourth book. It'll probably be shorter in length. That will come out at the after the last one. So there'll be four total, three that will be traditionally published and one that'll be indie pubbed.
Great. And can you tell us what the next one is touching on?
Sure. The third book in the series is going, we have an official title now. It's going to be Cloaked in Beauty. And it is a mashup of Little Red Riding Hood and Sleeping Beauty together. So, instead of, in Sleeping Beauty, where she's raised by the fairies, well, this time, she wears a red cloak and she's raised by her grandmother out in, so it's a, It's a road trip romance. So there's a Pinkerton detective that's hired to find her. She's a missing heiress, and he's trying to get her by her 21st birthday. 21st birthday is when she's going to be, proclaimed heiress, and she gets to have this money. And there's a bad guy that doesn't want her to get it. He wants it for himself, and so all of that. So it's going to be a road trip adventure romance kind of story. But it was really fun to try to find a way to blend these two stories and still pay homage to both. So.
So here's an interesting question. I've had a few readers ask me this, which is strange because I don't really write fairy tale stuff, but they've asked, how do you mesh the elements of, and I guess some of it goes with my dark gothic too, like, Edgar Allan Poe or fairy tales. How do you mesh that with a faith thread when, fairy tales a lot of times are considered a little bit more mystical, I suppose you could say, or magical. Magical might be a better word. So how do you blend that together as you're writing a story of faith?
That's a great question. So for me, these stories, if you had never been exposed to the fairy tales, they would just be good stories. They have their own plot lines that are completely separate from, the original plot line. So that they're not retelling the fairy tale to a certain extent. They're just, inspired by, and so that because they have their own storyline, there's freedom to do more with it. So for instance, one of the big themes in If the Boot Fits is about family and forgiveness and reconciliation. The heroine has been off to school in the East, and she and her father have become estranged because she views things that he has done as being cruel, whereas in his point of view, he's trying to do things for her good, for her protection, that kind of thing. And so there's a lot of theme of learning to see things from other people's point of view, having reconciliation, dealing with difficult family situations and with family secrets that are hurtful that, come to light, and how do you deal with that in a positive way? So there's a lot of chances to add spiritual elements to that as these characters are dealing with these difficult emotional issues. In addition to all of the surface conflict, where your life's in danger and this is happening and that's happening. And of course, my characters tend to be people of faith anyway. And so, like, I'm a person of faith. How am I going to handle it if, this tragedy happens? Well, I'm going to turn to God, right? And I'm going to ask God, what am I supposed to do? I'm confused. I don't know what your plan for me is. And, so we have those moments where the characters are turning to God and turning to godly people for advice and, that kind of thing. And so there's elements of that that supersede the mystical and magical, elements that were common in the original fairy tale.
That's a great answer too. And you look at things like that, and even in the original fairy tale, I was thinking, well, I shouldn't say the original, but the Disney version that I remember, there was that element of familial revenge almost. Like Cinderella gets revenge on her wicked stepsisters and her wicked stepmother by entering the princess role, and kind of it's this feeling of justice that you have as someone watching or enveloping yourself with a fairy tale. But then when, like what you're saying, when you look at real family dysfunction, that type of justice doesn't usually work out well, even if it did happen. So it's neat to think about reading a story along those lines where you have family dysfunction and family secrets and forgiveness and things that actually have to go through a faith filter. And was that something that you kind of pulled those elements out because of the story of Cinderella, or what led you in the direction of kind of addressing some of those themes of forgiveness and family?
Some of them, I think, just developed naturally as I was figuring out who my main characters were. And, for instance, the hero has been working at a ranch that's not in the same town, but he grew up there. And so I'm thinking, well, how can my two characters not know each other? If she's been, raised, and, wouldn't he recognize who she is? She's, the daughter of the cattle king. Everybody would know who she is, you know.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay, well, I need to send her off to school. I need to do something to get her out of town so that they don't automatically know who each other are. So there were some plot devices that I used in order to create the you know, how they're going to meet and how they won't know each other and, you know, those kind of things. And then because of that, you know, when you, as an author, you keep asking, you know, what if or why,
Right,
and, you know, those
right.
kind of things. And so as I was asking those questions, the answers that came to mind that made the most sense to me were these family issues that came up. And then it just kind of developed naturally as the story itself developed.
That's really cool. It's kind of neat when you're writing something and it starts developing, and then you actually start to see parallels that you didn't intend as an author.
Right. Yeah.
You're like, oh, that's cool. There's a parallel there. Do you ever have it? I've had it where some readers like email me about parallels or things that they've found in the book or these deep spiritual threads. And I'm like, didn't even think of that. Didn't know. And they're like, great job. And I'm like, thank you.
I'm so glad God showed that to you because he hadn't shown that to me yet. So I'm
I know. I know. Oh, man. Well, this is great. So the book comes out in March. And people can pre-order it at Baker Bookhouse. What date does it come out in March? Do we
I
know?
believe March 12th.
March 12th. So when this airs, you have just a couple more days to get it on pre-order from Baker Bookhouse, which means you get 40% off and you get free shipping. So that's all
Super good deal.
it is a very good deal. It's cheap. It's the cheapest deal I found anywhere, even.
It, for print books, you can't beat it. And they send it. My favorite thing is they take such care with their books and they wrap them in brown paper and they send them in a box. My daughter's always complaining about getting books and they're all smushed up in her mailbox. And, you know, and these always come in pristine condition. I love it.
Oh, they are wrapped with TLC, and it's like opening a Christmas present. Even when I know what's
It
inside, I'm like, oh, this is fun.
is.
Oh man. Well, Karen, if people want to find out more about you and keep track, because we've got Red Riding Hood slash Sleeping Beauty coming in the future and another one after that, where's the best place for them to do that?
So the best place to find me online is my website,
Okay.
KarenWittemeyer.com. Also, the best place to interact with me with social media is in my posse. I have a Facebook group called The Posse, and we are a really fun, active group of book lovers of Christian fiction, and it's a great place to just talk books and have fun. A lot of times I will ask my posse members to help me brainstorm ideas and to develop, you know, what do you think this character will look like? And they give me inspiration and ideas. And so it's a wonderful place to connect and to have that you know, have a little bit of inspiration of your own thrown into the story. So so it's a
That's on
lot of
Facebook.
fun.
That's on Facebook,
Facebook.
right?
Yeah, just
Okay.
search for the posse or there's a link on my website. So
Okay, awesome. Sounds good. Well, Karen, thank you so much for being with us today at Mad Lit Musings. For those of you listening, be sure to check out the video on YouTube if you're listening on a podcast player. And if you're listening on YouTube, you can go to your podcast player if you're transferring to the car and finish up the interview. Be sure to like and subscribe and all that jazz that we have to add at the end of these podcasts. But thanks, Karen, so much for being a part today.
thanks, Jamie. It's been so fun.
Head on over to YouTube where you can check out your favorite authors and yours truly as we chat up about books, about all the strange and weird subjects we like to talk about here at Mad Lit Musings. And you can even see our faces because it's video, because it's YouTube. So go check it out, Mad Lit Musings, right now. Are you still here? Go! Check it out! It's on YouTube.
Thank you for joining Mad Lit Musings, where every conversation is a journey and every book is a new adventure. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast player or check us out on YouTube, and let's explore the fascinating intersection of faith, society, and storytelling together.